Welcome back. Time now for our friends at Tree Hugger to give us the news and review.
I'm Simran Sethi. Welcome to Tree Hugger Radio. This week we offer up something tasty and inspiring, an interview with Alisa Smith and James McKinnon. Ardent supporters of the local food movement, Alisa and James are the founders of 100miledietdiet.org and the authors of Plenty, One Man, One Woman, and A Raucous Year of Eating Locally. The book is a reflection on the evolution of the North American food system, where the average food item now travels about 1,500 miles from farm to fork, and farmers receive about 18 cents for every dollar we spend on food.
So, James and Alisa, on the first day of spring in 2005, you started on a journey to not only consume food and drink created within 100 miles of your apartment in Vancouver, Canada, which sounds really revolutionary to me. But James, you made a point to say that you weren't deluded enough to feel that you were making a difference or being the change. What did you think you were doing when you two started?
We were really just launching a personal experiment. We'd been traveling various, ethical pathways related to food for quite a long time, and this just seemed like something that would have something to teach us personally if we really explored it in a deep way. So we just jumped in cold turkey.
We got our first hint of that when we bought a cabin up in northern British Columbia a few years back, and we ended up eating off the land there just because there's no corner stores up there, there's no roads up there. So for the first time, we had a meal where we were part of it all from start to finish, going fishing, picking mushrooms, gathering dandelion leaves. And we just wanted to recreate the both that taste and that feeling back in the city where we lived and where most people today live.
You describe that taste and that feeling so beautifully in the book. Can you just give listeners a taste of what that's like? The first meal that you shared together when you decided to do this, how did that meal taste so very different from the meal that preceded it?
Well, I mean, it was a couple of things, really. It was the freshness of the food really was fundamentally different. I mean, we had fish that had just been pulled out of the river. We had mushrooms that had just been pulled off the forest floor. All of the foods that we'd collected were just immediately fresh from harvest and selected right at their peak of ripeness and flavor. But beyond that, it was just the connection that we had with the food. It really did feel like the first time that either of us could remember that we were really a part of the story of everything that we were eating on the plate that day.
And that's, I remember, Alisa, you cite that, today 20 species provide 90% of the world's food. Like, what are the implications, not only in terms of our health, but in terms of our culture, to lose these artifacts?
Well, what I was thinking more is what dependence on a small number of species of food is dangerous in terms of food security, because they become susceptible to disease and blight. And more from a sense of the cultural perspective, I mean, a lot of traditional cultures, the food that they grow is intimately part of the culture itself. So to lose these traditional species of fruits and vegetables is sort of a sign of cultural collapse as well.
When we look at this industrial system, I think one of the things that's been a big challenge for me is, for many years, people who were trying to slowly start to transform the food system said, we really need to look towards organic foods. And now what's happening, of course, is that organic foods are being co-opted by these agribusinesses. How do you, when you look at the local food system and then look at sort of larger standards for what organic might be, is that something that you strive to reconcile at all? Or is that something that fits into your idea of what a local food system should be?
Well, certainly the original ideals of the organic movement in the 1970s included local, because it was all small-scale farmers doing it at the time. But as it became more and more commercially viable and the big companies got involved, the organic standards now have nothing to do with local. They're still, I suppose, a bit better than nothing, because they're keeping, the load of chemicals out of the earth. But really the system to shoot for, at the heart of it, is local, and basically organics will follow whether it's certified or not, because almost any small farmer both doesn't want to use chemicals on their property and probably doesn't have to, because when you have a wide variety of crops growing in a really small area, they're not really susceptible to pests in the same way that, you know, 10,000 acres of wheat all in a row is.
Yeah, it's turning into this strange kind of false choice where people are being asked, well, which way do we go, local or organic? Well, let's go local and organic. I mean, we certainly ate more organic food in our local eating year than we ever had before, and there really was no reason to think that the two of them couldn't work together. And I mean, if I'm pressed on it, I mean, if people say, if you had to make a choice, would you choose local or organic? I do say local, and that's strictly because I think the real crisis in the food system is a crisis of transparency. We don't know where our food's coming from, and when we don't have the capacity to understand how our food was produced and under what conditions and with what genetically modified organisms or what have you, it makes it very difficult for us to make the choices that I think most people do in fact want to make.
Exactly. You said we're losing traceability and distance is the enemy of awareness, which I thought was so eloquent. One of the reasons I fell in love with Plenty is because I fell in love with the two of you and your voices and your relationship. And to, you know, this is just one little person reading your book and feeling like it was a romance traced through food and an oftentimes a challenging one. I mean, the whole craving for wheat for a really long time, you know, and then finding the bugs in the wheat and just all of it. I mean, what did this teach you about your relationship?
Well, one thing it taught me was, because we hadn't intended even to write the book so personally to begin with, but as the year went along, we realized that food, when you are so conscious of where the food comes from and what part it plays in your life, it plays a part in everything you do, which includes your relationships with other people. And that was part of the learning process of eating locally for a year.
I mean, I think a lot of the stresses and so on that are reflected in the book are an exploration of the difficulty in changing whole patterns of the way we live. I mean, we're really attached to many of the ways that we live, even though we're often aware that those ways of living are harmful to at least the environment, if not to ourselves as well. And so, you know, Plenty is in some ways, certainly much more than a book that's just about food and food miles. You know, it's really about the kind of perilous but exciting journey of actually transforming something fundamental in your life. One of the sort of most interesting things for Elisa and I was the question of time. I mean, here we are, but you know, ending up having to put all of this time and effort into tracking down new foods and cooking everything from scratch and growing some of our own food and putting away things for the winter. And society makes no accommodation for any of that anymore. I mean, we're just expected to work long hours at the office so that we come up with ready cash so that we can buy convenience food. And certainly there's no, you know, you couldn't go to your boss and say, I need to take 2 days off because the tomatoes are in season and I have to put them away for winter. So it's, it really is a struggle. I think we didn't even fully understand that until after we had been through the year.
Thanks for tuning in. To subscribe to this podcast, look for Tree Hugger Radio in the iTunes directory. And to sponsor Tree Hugger Radio, email us at advertising@treehugger.com.
And give EcoTalk a hug by donating now. We need your help to stay on the new lineup. See you next time.